Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. 6 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday afternoon. We're making progress through the week, ladies and gentlemen. So to come on the program today from the Media Research Center, Dan Gaynor, he joins us at the bottom of the hour. And in the next hour, we're very excited for my next guest, or the 11 o'clock guest, State Representative Chip Brown from District 105. You know him in South Mobile County, represents you guys in the legislature. So make sure that you stay tuned for that. George Floyd video leaked to the Daily Mail. If you haven't seen it, it's only way to describe it is sad, tragic, unfortunate. There's clearly something wrong there. We know from the toxicology reports that there were problems there. We also know about COVID-19, but my fear with this is here's what's going to happen. These policemen, what if Keith Ellison, who's the attorney general now in Minnesota, has overcharged these police? Now, Derek Chauvin, the guy with the knee on the neck of George Floyd for 9 minutes back in May, is probably a guy. It should face a manslaughter charge at minimum. But second-degree murder, and that's going to be difficult to convict. What I fear is, based on what I've seen on this video, if you haven't seen it, it's on the Daily Mail. What somebody had done was they took a cell phone video of police cam footage, put it up on the internet, and it's disturbing and tragic all at the same time. But nonetheless, you see it, and you kind of get the mindset of the officers that were there. I'm not saying any of their actions were justified, but the story starts to make sense because it's a big piece of the puzzle. But when we get to trial, and this case is heard, and a jury hears this, and they acquit this officer of murder, too, and they acquit all these other police officers, what is going to happen? Are we going to see more riots? This is a very dangerous situation. And this is what happens when you politicize justice. The Minnesota Attorney General, he is just doing what he sees fit. He's succumbing to political pressure. But the problem is, you've got to get that conviction. And when this doesn't go the way people think it should, we're going to have what we had earlier this year with the riots all over again. I think you're going to see that in a lot of places where these incidents are. Because these Democrat-controlled cities, these Democrat-controlled states, these very blue states, they elect guys that are out of the mainstream. Let's face it. Particularly in cities where the politics are much different than they are in the rest of America. You get ideologues. And ideologues governing locally, they think globally, but they're terrible thinking locally. That's what you have going on here. This is an awful circumstance. And I fully just look at this, and I'm not a lawyer, I only play one on the radio, but I think these guys, these Minneapolis police officers, and even Derek Chauvin, have a good probability of being acquitted. Then you're going to have all kinds of craziness. Americans ought to be getting pretty fed up with that. You have another riot? Can we even withstand another riot? Now, I don't think this will happen until after the election. Everything could change by then. It may not be something that people are going to try to politicize, use for gain, use for that 2020 outcome. Because I think all of this was just the biggest get-out-the-vote effort for Democrats in this presidential election. The way it was covered on the media, the way we had to have these quote-unquote serious discussions. And it worked with a lot of people. I mean, just face it, this movement has won a lot of corporate sympathy. I mean, it's bad enough. It seems like this Black Lives Matter moment sponsored by McDonald's or Reebok or something. But really, it's having an impact. It's having an impact on not just the political circle, but on the entertainment industry in Hollywood. Sports, you see it. You see it in the financial sector. You see it on Madison Avenue and marketing, which I think marketing is such a big part of our culture. That this is the hip movement right now. And people really want to buy into it. But will this still be the case a year from now, or whenever this case is heard? But if it doesn't go the way it's supposed to, could we have violence? I mean, based on what we saw in May and into June, I think it's very high likelihood. It's irresponsible for the Attorney General of Minnesota to have intervened the way he did. And he's got a tough case to prove. He's got a very, very tough case to prove. He's got to hope for the best jury possible. But if I'm a defense attorney and I'm watching this, I got to think that they got a very, very good shot at beating these charges, these police officers. Because the standard of proof is going to be very tough. Once that moment happens, if you get a non-guilty verdict, then I think we're set up for more civil unrest. The question is, Minnesota, or Minneapolis, I should say, has disbanded their police department. Are they going to be ready for this? Are they going to be ready for the civil unrest? Any other city in the United States going to be ready for civil unrest? As we saw, they weren't ready for civil unrest. Well, a lot of damage to public and private property. My question is this, you know, like we can look back at our history and we saw the late 60s, early 70s riots and just a yearning for some kind of order. I mean, that's what gave Nixon his landslide win in 1972. And people just got fed up with it. Even though you look at the media and even the history books right now, you would think 1969 was a really big time for Democrat activism. The election results didn't show it. Instead, they would nominate these far-left guys like George McGovern. But in theory, could we have a repeat of that? Could we have Republicans win offices like they won then? Or have the demographics of the country changed so much as just the exposure to the media? We didn't have quite that exposure back then that we have now, where you could just open up your phone and there's, as we talked about in the last segment, big tech kind of dominating the narrative, guiding the narrative in a way that's favorable for who their political allies are. But if I'm watching TV, and for some people in the media, they totally misread America. Don Lemon, let's take him for example. He's watching these riots and this looting and all this going on in the streets of America, and he thinks it's a signal for change, and we got to do something about Trump. That's his righteous stand, right? But I think that person in Kansas or Arkansas or Alabama even, maybe Alabama doesn't matter as much because it's always going to go Republican, but let's even throw in a purple state. Let's throw in Ohio. They see that. They don't like that. And is there any reason to think that any of this is, you could tie this to Donald Trump? Well, Donald Trump starts talking about law and order. Republicans tend to be the law and order candidates. It's a very risky proposition to think, or for Democrats to think they could use this as some kind of leverage to turn out the vote, that this is the tool that they needed. But times have changed since that 68 election, that 72 election for sure. But remember what happened coming out of that. Yes, Nixon went down. And in 76, Jimmy Carter's elected. Although I would argue Gerald Ford had it a lot closer than it should have been. And a very tough primary fight with Ronald Reagan in 76. He had a shot at that in 76. But look what happened after that. In 76 election, throw that out because of Watergate. But the 1980, 1984, 1988... You had Republican presidents win all the way up until Clinton in 92. I mean, you can't necessarily tie it, but that movement was supposed to be the spark of change and revolution in the country in the late 60s and on in into the early 70s. It didn't happen. You had one Democrat president. You had Jimmy Carter, who I would argue was more moderate than anything. A Georgia Democrat. Not exactly Ted Kennedy. But it's not looking great for Donald Trump right now in the polls. Just keep this in mind with the polling. Those polls are starting to tighten, those national polls. There's some outliers out there showing Trump making gains. The thing you got to pay attention to, don't pay attention to averages. I like one reporter in Montgomery tells me, the only thing that matters is averages. No, you can't just take a poll that samples adults, and one that samples likely voters, one that samples registered voters, and make them all into one big sample. No, you got to look at it. The likely voter, to me, is the most important poll. Everything else, it's just for your entertainment. The only reason you want to watch national polls is you want to watch for trends. I said this yesterday. If the trend of the poll is heading south, that's a bad sign. But you don't want to look at it as if it is an indication of which way an election's going to go. You're just looking at it for, is the president doing the right thing? Do we think the country's on the right track? Right track, wrong track? You want to look at these individual states. You want to look at the purple states. 7-8 states really matter in the presidential election. And those are the ones you want to pay to for the purposes of elections. But you see more and more of this stuff on TV, the George Floyd stuff in particular. People get worried. People get scared. What is their impulse going to tell them when they want to go vote? Do you go Democrat or Republican? It seems conventional wisdom seems to be you want to go in a Republican direction. Maybe I'm wrong now. Maybe people think they are safer with a Democrat in charge. But one thing Republicans could point to, where all of this strife and unrest is happening, it's in Democrat-controlled cities. Some are starting to do that. We saw Marco Rubio do that yesterday on Fox News. We see some others, Tom Cotton, really make this a point. But these are long-held Democrat strongholds in America where you're seeing these riots. Police brutality, it's not happening, or perhaps it is happening in Republican cities, but the big marquee incidents, the ones that are played up, they are happening in America's blue cities that have been Democrat for decades. It seems counterintuitive for Democrats to herald that as a reason for you to vote for a Democrat for president. Because these are the people that are running these cities. And we see what happens when they try to change course with de Blasio, going from Bloomberg to de Blasio. New York's not the same city. New York reminds me now, if you go to New York City, it reminds me a lot of what David Dinkins looked like before Giuliani came in. It's back to that. It's the homelessness. It's, the graffiti, prostitution, all kinds of just unsavory things going on the streets of New York City and Manhattan that you used to see a lot more of until Giuliani came along. But these are Democrats running major American cities. And if national Republicans say, do you want America to be like this city? Or do you want an America that's different? That's something Donald Trump can really make some gains on. Are Republicans, particularly in Congress, is this what you want? Is this what you want to see? So I we'll see how that plays out. But just a historical perspective, we've seen this play before and how that has worked. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5. We could have had him any day. We only let him go so long. Out of kindness, I suppose. I can't get to sleep at night. The parking lot's so loud and bright. The AC hasn't worked in 20 years. Probably never made a single person. Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you. 24 minutes after the hour. Thank you for tuning in. It's Tuesday. We're cracking. We're making our way through the week as Jason Isbell sings about Alabama Pines. Big Doug Jones supporter there, ladies and gentlemen. So to come on the program in the next segment, Dan Gaynor, the Media Research Center. Let me tell you about a little bit about him because he's going to be a regular guest on this program. My first job in Washington, D.C. was at the Media Research Center. Those of you that are longtime listeners of FM Talk 106.5, is about the time I started coming on this station regularly. Back when it was Sean Sullivan and Wayne Gardner in the mornings, I think it started out as Tuesday, but eventually it evolved to be Wednesday. But I was an employee there. We just talk about the media and the trends in the media and things like that. But the guy that hired me, Dan Gaynor, we have kept in touch. I went on to go work for Tucker Carlson, the Daily Caller, now at Breitbart. But he gave me that start in journalism in Washington, D.C. It's a think tank. It's a conservative think tank, obviously. But they look at trends in media and which way the media is. Obviously, it's biased. They are openly left of center now, no question about it, and they're not ashamed of it. But what you really want to watch with the media are, you know, why is this guest showing up on every channel all of a sudden? Why is this phrase being used? Why is this talking point being sent around? Who's sending that talking point around? Who is it? Is it the Democratic Party really playing this? You know, like reading between the lines. That's what they do. They look for that. They pour through transcripts. They watch hours of video. They read the newspapers. That was part of my job when I was there. I handled business news. Business news maybe not as egregiously liberal as the rest of the news media. But at the time I was there was when we were having all this financial calamity with the housing market bubble bursting, all this bad debt out there, the fall of Bear Stearns, all these hedge funds that had bought too many mortgage securities. And the push at the time from the business media, the business community, was more government assistance, and that's how we got the TARP bailout. But you could watch all along as this was falling apart, as that financial collapse was happening, you could watch what the media were doing. And they were trying to set up for Bush or what would be Barack Obama as president to give them more help. But we made it through that. But that's what we did. That's what our next guest is going to talk about, just to kind of catch you up before we hit that break and let you know a little more about him. That's Dan Gaynor. Some other things going on. Donald Trump fires the TVA top executive, like the highest paid employee in the federal government. TVA really kind of a public-private hybrid partnership. But he had outsourced work. And I went to an event. This was something Jeff Sessions, when he was running for Senate, was really, really big on. I went to an event in Huntsville. And what TVA was trying to do was they were trying to find lower-cost tech workers. And you see this all throughout the private sector. But when you see this happen in the public sector or the quasi-public sector, whatever you want to call it, it raises some eyebrows. And these jobs were in Alabama, but they were mostly in Tennessee. But Skip Thompson lost his job, and I think the moral of the story here, at least from Donald Trump's perspective, is let this serve as a warning to any federally appointed board. If you betray American workers, you will hear two words: you're fired. Clever, I suppose. But that's the kind of what Donald Trump was elected for on paper. I'd still say the reasons Donald Trump was elected in 2016 were a whole. It was more complicated than just borders and blue collar issues, that people were just sick of that. The way Washington was going, they just wanted to throw something different at the system, and they have, and it has been different. But in this case, he's living up to that virtue of America first, of the worker, that, you know, particularly where he has the power to on a level where it involves the federal government. I mean, the TVA was established it was a New Deal program established by FDR to kind of save the country from the Great Depression. And now they're trying to cut costs by sending jobs overseas or bringing in H-1B visa laborers and not paying, you know, especially when this guy's making $8 million or whatever a year. It's absurd. Congressman Mo Brooks weighs in on Twitter. Said TVA fires Americans and hires cheap foreign labor. TVA executive salaries are exorbitant. TVA equals no competition, unlike private sector execs who compete to earn profits, to earn pay. Way to go, President Trump. TVA has lost its way. That's Doug Jones. So this is something. Problems with the Tennessee Valley Authority are something that both Republicans and Democrats agree on. There's all kinds of issues there with the TVA. Something I've been watching closely. In some places in Alabama where the TVA kind of runs the show, they don't cooperate with the local governments. They make it very difficult. I think that TVA needs reformed. And it needs reformed in a big way. And it should be easier than reforming anything in a private sector, because this is an extension of government. But I think this is a step in that direction with the firing of this chief executive last week. And more of this to come, perhaps. It is getting kind of late in the game for Trump in this term. Should he get reelected, then maybe it changes the game a little bit. You see the way these guys start acting, it'll be a little bit differently. But, the TVA is a big deal in North Alabama. And they may be thinking twice now about the way they're going to run their shop when it comes to who they're going to hire and who they don't hire, particularly if they try to outsource that labor. All right, guys, we are going to take a break. This is the Jeff Borsch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Every morning at 8, make it to work, they're always late. Living by the job, in their dues. Life in Dixie with these Alabama blues. Cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Sing it. Song.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porsche Show on FM Talk 106.5. 35 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday afternoon. Still to come on the program today, State Representative Chip Brown will be in studio with us in the next hour. Make sure that you stay tuned for that. But next up on the program, as I mentioned, the Media Research Center, a good friend of mine, a guy that gave me my first job in Washington, D.C., Dan Gaynor joins us on the line. Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm sitting here watching it rain a lot. Because I was saying, this is weird. I'm talking to you on the Gulf Coast, and I'm the one getting the tropical storm, and you're not.
Yeah, it is the irony of the situation, but it sounds like it's just a tropical storm. That's just a bad rain shower.
Yeah, no, I don't think even the Carolinas got hit too bad. So it's just one of those things. It's just summer rain. It means I don't have to water my lawn. That's really how I look at it. But it's somehow appropriate. I mean, here we are 3 months out from the presidential election, and you know. Talk about storm clouds. This week and last week, it came out, but it came out in the New York Times this week. A bunch of far left Democrats got together with a bunch of never Trump Republicans. So basically, far left Democrats and slightly less far left Democrats got together to war game what was likely to happen
yes.
at the presidential election. Okay, because everybody thinks it's going to be close, mail in voting and all the rioting and everything's going to be chaotic. So they war gamed it. And John Podesta, if you remember him, you know, former Clintonite from the 2016 election, in one of the scenarios, he played Joe Biden. And in that scenario, they talked a couple of the governors of the states to send in phony electors into Washington, in other words, to overrule the voting. And they convinced the three western states, California, Oregon, and Washington, to threaten to secede if Joe Biden wasn't named. And I mean, this is the left strategy. This is not something that the right is talking about. This is why when the president talks about election, you know, fraud and stuff, this is what he's talking about. This is going to be the most lawyered and argued and fought over and contentious election we've had since 1860.
Yeah, well, usually when you hear that secession, you know, they want to tie it to race or whatever the left that is. But this circumstance, I mean, this is, it's hard to know if Podesta was really being tongue-in-cheek or what was going on there, but the idea that this would be, you know, even on anybody's radar, I mean, I think that sounds some alarm bells.
Well, I mean, apparently it wasn't. I mean, this was part of their debating strategy when they did this. And so, I mean, they think they can strong-arm Trump out of the White House in a close election. They think that they can bully Republicans into doing what their will because of the media and because of, you know, big tech and all this other stuff. And so, I mean, I when I talk about this, if wherever I talk in this country, people need to understand if you're going to have a close congressional or Senate race, you better line up your lawyers now. Because every ballot, every single ballot is going to be challenged. If they, if it's a mail-in ballot and it's got a slight smudge on it, somebody's going to say, oh, that doesn't count if they don't like it. So, I mean, go back to when Al Franken became senator in Minnesota. That was a close race, and basically the Democrats out-lawyered the Republicans. I mean, he was losing, but he had better lawyers. So this is a red flag for anybody on the right going into this election.
Yeah, well, the part that bothers me is the possibility that we could lose California, Oregon, and Washington State. I don't know what that country would be called or how they would go about that.
Leftcostia.
Yeah, I wonder what that utopia is going to be like if it got out on its own two feet. But this seems like something that ought to, you know, could you imagine if this were Republican states that did this? And the way we would be acting.
If Republicans gotten together and war game this, and in their war game, a prominent former, you know, Bush, you know, campaign guy had gotten together and played Trump and threatened to secede, you know, it wouldn't have been buried at the bottom of a New York Times article. It would have been the front page. Oh, you know, GOP plans to secede if they don't get what they want. You know, this is the left. The left, there are no rules for the left, and there are all rules for the right. And, you know, as my expression is, everything left is right, everything right is wrong. And that's the media's way of looking at it. Oh, well, you know, if they were to riot and bully people, it's only because they're righteous. They're right. They're going to get Trump out of the White House, man. He's a threat. You know, do you guys realize you're talking about secession and a coup?
Well,
it's legit when they do it, but it's not legit when anybody else does.
It's the ends justify the means. That's the rule that guides everything, and it's so, you know, it's bizarre to me that is allowed. It doesn't seem intellectually honest, I guess.
Well, it's not. So here's a question for you. I'm trying to ask this of people around the country. Are you seeing many political signs anywhere?
Well, yeah, we just had a Senate primary here. So
for presidential.
But presidential, no. That's an interesting point. Then a lot of ads, Trump running, you know, on the local cable stations here on Fox News, and you'll see Biden on the left-leaning networks. But you get beyond that, maybe one or two here and there on the broadcast channels. But signs are just not very many. I've seen a few Trump signs, but I think a lot of those Trump signs and those Trump flags are either homemade or something somebody bought.
Well, I mean, I live in the middle of Maryland in a sort of lefty area, and there are no signs for either president. And I don't know, maybe people are just afraid, given everything that's going on, that they're afraid to put them out on either side. But, I mean, in my community, we don't even have... I have a wildly diverse community. They don't even have any Black Lives Matter signs sitting out. A friend of mine lives in Bethesda, which is even more liberal. He said in all of the area he lives in, one Biden sign. He said there's a bunch of Black Lives Matter signs, but one Biden sign. That's it.
Well, is it a product that we just don't do yard signs like we used to, or that things are digital now?
In 2016, I mean, they were everywhere in 2016. I'm happy personally if my neighborhood doesn't become like a free fire zone about elections, just because, you know, I live in a cul-de-sac and it's kind of hard to ignore your neighbors. but I mean, I'm just sort of curious. I think what's happened is I think the Trump people are wary about being attacked. I think the Biden people, just aren't that many of them. I think there's some people who are going to vote for Biden, but I don't think Biden has that many supporters. I think it's just, he's a default candidate for so many people.
You're right. He's not Trump. It's Trump versus not Trump more than it is Trump versus Biden.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I've called in the Weekend at Bernie's candidate. I mean, they're trying to drag him across the finish line and not let him talk to anybody.
Well, that can't last. We've never had a presidential election like this, and maybe you could make that case if Biden were some kind of like war veteran or hero and committed some kind of heroic acts, but he's just a long time product of Washington D.C. via Delaware, and people. I mean, he's always been gaffe prone, but he. I mean, that doesn't strike me as people. The most people are going to be willing to put up with that. Now, recognize this, though. I mean, I'm in this bubble, and I watch this stuff blow by blow, but I try to look at it from a different perspective. I just, if you get those two, Trump and Biden, on a debate stage together, and Biden flounders around,
what question are you? Across several outlets now, you've seen prominent liberals calling for Biden not to debate Trump.
But
and New York Times an op-ed, and CNN is an op-ed.
Does that raise more red flags than not?
Well, I mean, I would argue so, but I think here's what I would say. I think Biden is not coherent enough to go on stage for 2 hours and not make a huge brain freeze gaffe. And now if you've seen, and you can discount this or not, Dan Bongino has come out and claimed he's heard from insiders, which, you know, might be Secret Service or whatever, that Biden's deteriorating, his mental faculties have continued to deteriorate, and they certainly aren't allowing him out to talk to hardly anybody. And so that makes, I mean, it, you know, makes the whole nation wildly suspicious. So basically, when you're voting for Biden, you know, I think most people now think they're voting for his vice president, which is interesting that he delayed who that was a week.
Well, speaking of the vice president's stuff, it seemed early on that Stacey Abrams was the darling of the media. She was being courted as a potential VP. The Kamala Harris name doesn't go away. Right now, though, Dan, and I don't know what y'all are seeing, but it seems like Susan Rice is kind of the candidate du jour.
Well, it's like every one of these who bubbles up gets chopped down. There's a lot of, like, you know, Oppo being floated out by Democrats and into the media, to their media friends. So Karen Bass came out, and then all sorts of bad stuff by Karen Bass came out, that she was pretty tolerant of the commies and pretty supportive of Scientology, neither one of which is likely to gain her a lot of votes. But the problem with Kamala Harris is, you know, is a problem on the left. I mean, not only did she lock up, you know, poor black people as, you know, like the head cop in California, but she's also a person of color. She's not African American. I've seen that complaint on MSNBC, and then that she's married to, you know, a Jewish guy. That they're bothered by that too. I mean, there was a whole segment of the Joy Reid show a few months back complaining about this. I'm not exactly a Kamala Harris fan. When I end up on radio defending Kamala Harris to marry whoever the hell she wants, you know, that's a weird place to be, but that's how bad the left is, that they're going to criticize you because of your race, even if you're a person of color.
Well, she's the front runner. Is that fair? I mean, I can't see.
I don't think she's the front runner. I think she's the default. If they can't find somebody else, they keep circling back to her. But if you remember during the campaign, you know, when she was running against Biden, her one big moment was when she called Biden a racist. But in general, her support in the black community is, I mean, just ridiculously low. She doesn't add anything to Biden's campaign as far as the black community. She just simply, you know, is a person of color who's a senator that he can name. I don't think it helps him much. And in fact, here's the interesting: Hispanics are running ads now blasting Biden, who said he's going to name African American woman as his running mate. And they're like, "Well, there are more Hispanics in America than there are blacks in America. Well, how come you're doing that?"
Well, it's the politics of the time. But I would also argue the problem with Kamala Harris is, well, Biden ought to win California anyway. What does that add?
There is that. You know, it seems like some of the standard rules of politics have gone out the window. You know, it used to be that you wouldn't name a VP from a state that you were already going to win. You know, why would you do that? I mean, you know, it doesn't matter how many million Californians turn out to vote for you. And then, of course, I'm not sure they like her that much in California anyhow.
Well, and here's the question, I guess. We'll kind of wind it down on this. Without the conventions, those are always like kind of the springboard into the real, like the meat potatoes of the campaign election cycle. No conventions. What's that going to be like?
I mean, I think there's, for all that the inside the Beltway people care about this election, I think most Americans don't. I think most Americans want it to go away. People are tired of the media pounding Trump. They're tired of the constant controversies around Trump. They have no interest in Biden because he's as charismatic as a wet dish towel. I mean, I think if you asked Americans, they go, why are we doing this? They're focused on trying to restart their lives. They're trying to focus on the virus and whatever that means to their lives and their businesses. And I mean, the election, which is the most pivotal we've had in 160 years, is an afterthought, I think, to most people. And so in the final analysis, this is the scary. If you are on the left or in the media, because they're on the left, that this is a base election, and you know the GOP is going to turn out because they know what happens if they lose. They know they've already seen governors in COVID states shutting down churches but allowing rioters and protesters to protest. They've already seen governors going after gun stores but saying that lefties can do whatever they want. They know what happens if the left takes over. The left has talked about packing the Supreme Court, changing the Electoral College, mandatory national health care, this whole line of green things, the Green New Deal. I mean, it's going to be a war on every front. And so the right's going to turn out. It has to. But whether the left is motivated by Joe Biden and fill in the blank VP candidate, I'm just not sure they are.
Hey Dan, we got to leave it there real quick before we let you go. Tell folks where they can find you on social media, where they can find all your great work, that both at Fox News and at the MRC.
Oh, they can just go to newsbusters.org to find out about the MRC. They can find me on Twitter at Dan Gaynor, DanGainor. And I hope I get a bunch of new followers from your new show. And again, congrats. And they can find me because I write for FoxNews.com. Find me in the opinion section every week.
Hey, Dan, as always, thanks for making time for us.
Thanks, man.
All right, we got to take a break. We will be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
First thing I and welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5, 56 minutes after the hour. If you want to give us a call, feel free to do so, 251-343-0106. You can also hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com/Jeff_Poor. Address any complaints to one Sean Sullivan about the program. That is where you should direct program complaints or anything of that nature. Please do not send them to me because it might hurt my feelings. I appreciate that very so much. One thing I want to talk about real quick before we go to break here. Los Angeles Times. So this is California. Fair enough. We know that is a blue state, but there's a poll out there that was conducted by the University of California Berkeley Institute of Governmental Studies. Shows Trump down by 39 points in California. You're like, yeah, okay, big deal. But it's a bigger margin in 2020 than it is. 9 points larger in 2020 than it was in 2016 with Hillary Clinton on the ballot. Why does this matter? This is important, guys. If Republicans want to take over Congress, and they want to win Congress, win back control, they're going to have to do a little bit better than this in California, because there's still Republican seats in California. I mean, the minority leader, Kevin McCarthy, is from California. And with Trump dragging the ballot down in this very, very blue state, you could lose some congressional seats. There was a pickup there not too long ago at a special election. Well, that's back on the ballot again. So this is not good news. The way this Los Angeles Times story discusses it, they portray it in a way that suggests Trump's base is eroding. But I think it has broader implications for the electorate as a whole. Guys, we're going to take a break. We will return. This is FM Talk 106.5.
And they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton bales and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run in. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.